Welcome to Star Guys, a podcast about Stargirl on DC Universe and the CW. I'm not number one Star Guy, but one of the Star Guys. I'm Alex.
I'm number one Star Guy. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
Which ranking Star Guy are you, Pete? What's going on?
I don't believe in that.
I yield my time to the ranking star guy.
I'm a co-host. I know that much.
Yeah, you're a communist star guy. Everything even in Star Guy's podcast. Anyway, we are going to be talking about the second episode of Stargirl called Stripe, or more specifically, S.T.R.I.P.E.
They will spell it out, so don't you worry about it. They cover that in the episode.
And yes. You just nailed the Star Guy spelling bee, Alex, by the way.
That's a hard one.
That's a hard one.
Next week, we'll try to spell Stargirl. So this is the second episode of the show. We're going to be talking about the DC Universe airing, which is a little bit longer than the CW airing, depending on when you're listening to this. But don't worry, we do a bonus podcast that goes up Tuesday nights after the CW airing. You check that out. That is going to talk about some of the deleted things, scenes, things that we're missing. So you're going to get bonus time no matter what.
And the fun of that podcast is we're a little looser. We're cutting loose a little bit. It's sort of the CW airing.
Yeah, it's not as buttoned up as this podcast.
Yeah, this one's very buttoned up, very serious. I'll tell you, I always have a martini when I'm doing the bonus cast.
Ooh. Two olives?
Oh, you know it.
Dirty. Nice. Were you going to actually say something else, Pete, or were you just going to ask Justin about his martini?
I was going to say, I think that I'm calling it now, the difference between the short one and the long one, pancakes, the pancakes thing. That's what I'm saying gets cut.
Wow. Oh, you're making a prediction about what was cut from the DC Universe airing to the CW pairing. Yeah. You think the pancake scene is cut. All right, let's hold on to that.
You're going to cut out that prime Mike content?
I don't think so. Prison rules calls it.
I don't want to ruin anything. I don't want to blow any spot because I have seen both versions of the episode. The CW airing is just Mike talking about pancakes.
Oh, that's smart.
Mike narrates the whole episode.
He does like a whole Robin Williams thing. He's just riffing, going into voices. It's great.
Mike is comedy gold, man. I don't care what either of you guys say. I love him.
Yeah. You know what else is gold is Stargirl because it's ratings gold. This is one thing that we should probably mention here before we get into the episode proper. DC Universe doesn't do numbers like most streaming services. Smart. They never talk about anything. But the CW, of course, is a broadcast network, so they have to talk about numbers. And as it turns out, the first episode of Stargirl was a big hit on the CW, which I was pleasantly surprised about. Got in the first airing, this doesn't include repeat airings or streaming or anything like that, 1.2 million viewers, and it was a 0.3 in the rating, which is very solid for the CW.
That is truly great.
Yeah.
I would not have expected that.
Not at all. Particularly for a summer show, even with things not airing, it is tied with Nancy Drew as the biggest debut of the past year, and it's just below where Batwoman was, which was a huge hit back in the fall.
So it's
in good shape, and I'm excited to see how it plays out over the course of the summer. Pete, you were raising your hand. What's going on?
I feel like the situation really helps. Like, you know, people are really starving for content right now, and I feel like putting out a new show right now is just a great idea as far as people being able to watch something, especially something that's a new show. So I think they hit that sweet spot.
Not to disagree with you, I think there is potentially a factor of that there, but at the same time, there are a lot of things that are just not playing at all right now.
Yes, 100%.
So I would chalk it up more to the fact that most folks don't know it's a DC Universe show to begin with, and the CW has built up almost a decade of goodwill of you know what you're getting if you're getting into a superhero show. They're all pretty even in the ratings. They're all about that level. So I think it's more like, oh yeah, I like Arrow, I like Supergirl, I like The Flash, I like all these shows. I'm going to check out this. I'm going to enjoy this as well.
Thanks for putting Arrow first where it belongs.
It was actually at the bottom of the rankings. That's where I was putting them. I was ranking them in order going up.
Well, I don't have time for that bullshit.
Classic countdown. And I will say, I think this show, of all of those shows that you mentioned, sort of has more of a take, or more of like, there's a lot more stylistic flourishes when it comes to the making of it. And it feels very specific to this show, the way the narrative unfolds, that I think
plus,
will help keep these viewers that tuned in on board.
Plus, it's combining worlds. You have all the people who love superhero stuff, and then all the people who love those car shows about people restoring old cars and bringing them back to life, combining them both with Stargirl. I mean, this is money.
And pancake fans. Don't forget about pancake fans coming in there right at the end.
Oh, yeah. The flapjackers are coming out big for this show. You know, you flapjack
hive. Don't mess with a flapjacker.
Yes. Now, before we get into the second episode, before we get into a recap here or anything like that, Jeff Johns wrote the episode. It was directed by Greg Beeman. The first episode was directed by Glenn Winter. But regardless of the change of directors, Jeff was kind of looking at it as a movie. This is the Stargirl movie. This is the introduction, these first two episodes. So with that all out of the way, just sort of in broad strokes, how did you feel about these first two episodes as a unit?
I liked watching it as a unit as well, because the second episode, this episode we're talking about today, really cements everything. The first episode threw a lot up in the air, but this really proves the theory that the characters all need each other and they need to be exactly where they are in Blue Valley. So I thought it was great. I do think it's strange they were directed by two different people.
Yeah. I imagine that was just for budget and time, right? Something like that.
Yeah, and there's such a big thing to be the director of a pilot as opposed to the second episode.
Yes.
What's nice is they pick up right where the other one left off, so it really does feel like one big story, which is great.
Like these a lot of episodes. Movies.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
A lot of times movies pick up right where the middle of the movie left off.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? A lot like the second half.
Most of the time, like the second half of the movie is often takes place right after the first half of the movie.
Do you ever go to like a Broadway show or just really any theatrical show, and there gets to a point about halfway through where there's just everybody disappears and there's like no plot for 5 to 10 minutes? Most of the audience is getting up and going to the bathroom because they hate it, and then they come back, and sometimes it's the same place, sometimes it's not, but it just doesn't make sense, right, Pete?
Oh, yeah, man. Those plays are tricky, the way they change like that.
It's like everyone goes on a mission. You know what I'm talking about? Like a separate mission where you don't know where they are, like international even, like an intermission somewhere out in the world.
You lost me right at the end there. Yeah. Let's do some recap of what's happened.
I'm enjoying this very much. I think that they're doing a fun job of actually having some humor, having some fun, like, moments and all the kind of, like, madness. And I feel like the tone of this is different and interesting. And I think that, it's kind of a new take on something that we've seen a lot. I mean, in this episode particularly, they kind of make fun of montages and that kind of stuff. I'm having a blast with this show.
Yeah, I agree. If we want to talk about it in general for a sec, it has the vibe of a 80s or 90s action show, which I think is so fun. Like, there's shows that maybe we watched a lot when we were younger. They don't do those the same way anymore, where there are sort of
like it's A-Team.
Like A-Team or like even all those like Hercules, Xena, shows like that, where it's like dramatic action sequences, but also like pretty funny at points. Like that tonal blending across the board, I feel like you don't see that as much, and this show really nails it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that honestly comes from Luke Wilson, if anything. His delivery on a lot of this stuff is just not off the wall is too strong, but it's just clearly not believing what he's saying. And I'll tell you, for my day job, I interviewed him about the show.
There
and
he we was go. Talk,
dude, I'm offering up some information, Pete. Anyway, what he apparently is like, he never read superhero stuff, was never really into comic book stuff, and he would go on set and he told several stories over the course of the interview where he was talking about not understanding anything that was going on, where Breck Bassinger, who plays Courtney Whitmore, kept correcting him, where he'd be like, "We need to go get Iceman." And she'd be like, "You mean we need to get Icicle?" And he's like, "Yeah, that's what I said." So that sort of thing, constantly checking with Jeff. And you'll appreciate this, Pete. The inspiration he looked to that finally made it all crisp in for him was Han Solo. That he started to look to Han Solo as like, how does Harrison Ford say this nonsense and believe it? And that's what he tried to channel, to be like, Harrison Ford in the same way hated the Star Wars movies, but sold the stuff completely.
I would argue he still does.
Yeah, still does. And Luke Wilson clearly loves being in the show, but he looked at that for inspiration in terms of like, my character, I don't understand what's going on, so my character doesn't understand what's going on, but I'm just going to roll with it anyway. And I think that really comes through with the line readings is what makes them fun.
Oh, definitely. He has this, like, sitcom dad doofiness that he's bringing to this role where he's being super serious, but he's also like, all these buttons are screwed up.
I mean, the part where he walks into the gym eating a sandwich is hysterical, and then he's just like, has like a couple line readings where he's rolling his eyes during it, but it's so fun.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about what happened previously on Stargirl. So as we've hinted at, Courtney Whitmore is a young girl. She's about 15 years old, was living in Los Angeles when she was very young, about 10 years before this. Her father never came home for Christmas. He never rarely came home anyway. And he disappeared the same night the Justice Society of America all died. They were killed by the Injustice Society of America. And in the intervening 10 years, Pat Dugan, who was AKA Stripesy, the sidekick of Starman, has been searching around trying to find out where the Injustice Society is, as we find out more about this episode. He meets Courtney's mom, who's named Barbara Dugan, I guess now, but Barbara Whitmore. They move to a town of Blue Valley, and it turns out Blue Valley is not all that it seems. Blue Valley actually seems to be the home of several supervillains from the Injustice Society of America, which, again, as we find out this episode, is not as big of a coincidence as you might think. As for Courtney, she discovers that there is this cosmic staff, which was the wielded by Starman. She inherits it. It has a personality of its own. She immediately starts to think that Starman was in fact her dad. Pat doesn't believe it. And over the course of the episode, she plays around with the staff, figures out more about the power that it has, blows up a car at the local drive-in where some very thuggy jocks are being
hooligans.
Hooligans. If you will. But this also brings her directly into contact with one of the members of the Injustice Society of America, Brainwave, who has mind powers and is very, very evil. He is also, not so coincidentally, the father of Junior, one of the hooligans who Courtney roughed up a little bit with the cosmic staff. And as we end the episode, she was tussling with Brainwave. We thought maybe he was blown up, and then suddenly a robot comes down out of the sky, and it turns out it's Pat in a robot suit, and that's where we left off the episode. There's a couple of other things you probably need to know just very quickly. There's a company called the American Dream that is based in Blue Valley. That is what Barbara works for. That is her new job that has brought her back to Blue Valley. They seem, at least on the surface, literally the surface, as we find out this episode, to be just a reclamation project to turn it into the perfect small town America. The other thing that I'm sure Pete is raising his hand to let us know is there's Mikey, who is Courtney's stepbrother. He's very funny, and he likes to microwave marshmallows. And also, most importantly of all, Pete is going to remind me, Pat owns a cool car.
Right? Oh, yeah, not just a cool car, a sweet Cadillac.
Great.
Sweet caddy.
He repairs cars. That's his job.
Also, Barbara, played by Amy Smart, so well. fantastic.
Real Amy also, Smart fan.
Yes. And also Luke Wilson for this and Joel McHale. I mean, the really some A-list, well, I don't know if they're A-list, but close to A-list talent there.
Wow. Yeah, he's got to be like top 5 to 7 Wilsons, as
yeah.
we said.
Yeah, after yeah. the volleyball.
Yeah,
sure.
Where is he after this episode? Where is he on your Wilson
yeah,
rankings?
Yeah, I do. He's climbing up that list a little bit. I might have to read.
Has he beaten Wilson, the neighbor from Home Improvement, yet?
No.
Oh, okay. Wow. Are you sitting on a headline? Pete has a celebrity ranking blog, of course, where he really skewers a bunch of people. Are you sitting on a Wilson Spikes volleyball headline for later on when he finally gets to the top?
Yeah, that's a nice one.
Thank you very much. Feel free to use it if you have it already.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. I also would like to point out that she received one Christmas present that she hasn't opened yet from her father, and I'm hoping that that's going to reveal some stuff about him to her.
And for those of you that don't know, Pete is a 10-year-old boy obsessed with presents. So that's why he's focused on a very small plot point involving a Christmas present from the first episode.
Yes, very excited to see how that all pans out. Let's jump into the episode. As Pete mentioned, we pick off right where we left off with the stripe suit. It's revving. It's sparking. It's pretty cool. Courtney doesn't know what's going on.
Wait, I would like to say, though, it starts all black and you hear an engine. And for a second, I fantasized that it was just going to be the family riding in the Cadillac, you know, like, you know, start a little different, you know, just like really focus on the car a little bit. And so show some shots of them having fun in it. But no, it was picked up right where it left off.
Yeah. I'm going to get you a Matchbox car for Christmas, I guess, or something. You got to get this car shit out of your system.
No way, man.
This one's crazy to me. We've talked about other shows like American Gods where you can kind of stretch it and be like, okay, the car is literally a character because it used to be a god itself and it's infused with magic. This is just a fucking car, Pete.
It's a fucking sweet Cadillac. There's a difference between a car
there
and
is a
sweet
robot.
Cadillac.
They open up on a robot suit, which is way more exciting than the car.
Super fun. That's like the Cadillac of robot suits. I like how we start in this moment and we instantly get their relationship. He's like, get on the back of this robot suit. Yep. There are handles already there. It's like he knew.
Wow.
Yeah. And she's scared, but he offers the hand. She gets on it. He immediately has one of those Han Solo lines where he's like, come on, you hunk of junk. Which is very fun. And then they fly off, which is very cool. Just as Brainwave emerges from the tire factory with... very coincidentally, Courtney's ID, but it's burnt beyond recognition, and he can't tell who she is.
You can only see the hair.
Mm-hmm.
I love that camera move from them flying away down onto Brainwave walking out of the building.
I wrote down that it was a classic kind of like fun comic book moment, you know, where they fly overhead and then the villains kind of, that's fun.
I mean, even though they switched directors from the first episode to the second, I don't think it comes down in terms of just the visuals across the board in here. Yeah. There's a great tracking shot in the gym later on that's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
The action sequences towards the end are fun as well. It's very good across the board. After Brainwave emerges, Pat brings Courtney to his auto workshop, parks the robot suit, and the staff goes nuts. Courtney's hands
are
shaking.
Very aggressive.
She's nervous. She clearly relating to the staff says, I'm upset too. Give me a minute. And I like this moment. Like I like sitting in this a little bit rather than having a new hero who immediately is like, okay, we fought the villain. Let's go out and get them again. This shakes her up.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed. We went right back into where we were, where they were kind of like biting at each other a little bit. I was really hoping the chain of events of like her kind of like needing help and Pat being there for her would kind of let her soften her up a little bit. I mean, it happens later in the episode, but I was like, oh, please, let's not keep this tension going for too long. I was a little worried about it in the beginning, but it really got better.
Like you said, it's the arc of the episode, right? Is the robot suit comes down. She still thinks she can handle Brainwave. She blew him up just before. So I think there's a certain part of her that thinks she still doesn't need him. And what this episode is about is by the end realizing reaching a mutual respect for each other, which I think is good. It's a good arc to have here.
Mm-hmm. It's a testament to how she thinks Pat's a doofus, that even when he shows up with a badass robot suit, she's still like, okay, lay off, dad, stepdad. Like, I got this.
Yeah. I mean, some of the times when she's saying sidekick, I feel like there's a little venom in there. And I'm just like, whoa, let's, you know, he's helping. You know, let's not just undercut him all the time.
Pat. So we find out Pat built Stripe, the Stripe suit, after Sylvester died. He asks her about the attacker, realizes that it's Brainwave, as he dabs her wound a little bit from the Injustice Society of America. As you were mentioning, there's a little bit of a razzing going on there. She's like, you guys not too great about names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think about this moment? Because I feel like, in my mind, this is on the right side of the whole... poking how ridiculous comic books are. On the wrong side is the whole Wolverine being like, I'm not going to wear your fucking costume. This is stupid. Fuck you guys. This to me feels like, yeah, Justice Society of America is kind of stupid. And Stripesy is kind of stupid as well. And that tracked okay to me. But how'd you guys take it?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's stupid to be like, oh, there's a Justice Society. Well, we are the Injustice Society. Or the Injustice Society. Mm-hmm. Or just the Reverse Justice group.
Yeah, I felt like it was... I kind of liked it. The only disagreement I had with your statement was the, you know, making fun of Wolverine before for standing up for the fact that sometimes uniforms don't look cool. So
just to make sure this all tracks, Wolverine, played by Hugh Jackman, who you do not think was a good Wolverine...
Well, let's be clear. I'm not saying Hugh Jackman's a bad actor or doesn't grasp the character. I'm saying he's too tall, and it's a little disappointing that they don't focus on all the attributes that make someone great. And one of the things that makes Wolverine great is he's very powerful, but also very short.
Mm, that's true. That's one of the qualities that people say first when they say, think about Wolverine. It's like, yep. That dude is a badass. He's so short.
Cool. All right. Well, so we can only attack Wolverine in certain aspects only when it relates to his height.
And you wanted him to do that thing, Hugh Jackman to do that thing where he just crouched on his knees and put shoes on his knees.
Dwarf it, yeah.
You wanted him to dwarf it.
Dwarferine.
Yeah, or, you know, get apple boxes for everybody else. You know, find some way to kind of, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that would have been fun if everyone else is very tall.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think like is there a happy medium between Wolverine dwarfing it and everybody else getting on apple boxes, or is that just how movie production works? I'm unfamiliar, is why I'm asking you, Pete.
If only you had a job like during the day that could give you insider information about how the business works. You
Pete,
know?
Isn't it true that whenever you have a big business meeting, you bring two apple boxes and stand on them to intimidate everybody?
You're goddamn right.
Well, part of that is they're actually full of apples in case he gets hungry.
Yeah. He grew up in an orchard, so he has a lot of apple boxes on him.
So after the rousing of the name, we get a couple of more Easter eggs dropped here. Beyond the characters that we saw killed last episode, we also find out the Injustice Society killed Johnny Thunder, Hawkman, and Hawk Girl. So they're all dead. Probably not too much of a problem with Hawkman and Hawk Girl, who come back to life all the time.
Yeah, truth.
But Johnny Thunder, a little bit of tough breaks for him. And also we specifically find out that Icicle killed Starman. Courtney calls out, she doesn't think it's a coincidence that the villains are there. She thinks there's more to it, and she wants Pat to stop lying. But that's kind of the end of that conversation. That's what we get of that at that time.
Yeah.
And then, speaking of the villains, speaking of it not being a coincidence, we go over to William Zarek's house, a.k.a. the Wizard, who we saw briefly in the first episode. We don't know he's the Wizard yet because he shaved his ridiculous mustache. But his son wakes him up. Zarek goes behind a painting of himself, I guess.
Very cool. That's where I hide stuff.
It looked like a painting of his father or something, or grandfather. It seemed like a family photo.
Sure. I think it was a painting of him.
Oh, okay.
Let me ask you, at what point in your like financial journey toward wealth, do you think you'll be like, time for a painting of myself?
Oh, as soon as I get over $100, it's happening.
Over $100.
I can't wait to get that fake painting money.
Yeah, Pete's going to go right to Central Park, get a really nice painting of himself with a big head in a race car.
Yeah.
Yep.
Put it right on the wall.
That's that big money. That caricature money.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Zarek goes behind the painting, finds a safe. He grabs his wand and goes downstairs, and none other than Brainwave is there. He immediately says, "Why are you wearing that?" Which establishes an interesting dynamic between them. Clearly, based on the mustache shaving and everything else, Zarek is, you know, trying to fit in some way. Brainwave clearly is not, I think.
And I feel like it's been, I think the point here is they haven't been in their villain costumes, or they haven't been up to villain shit in a long time. And the emergence of Stargirl has prompted Brainwave to get his old costume out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough when you're trying to get the band back together. Not everybody's into it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're like, come on, put on the makeup. Get in the costumes.
Yeah, especially because Brainwave is giving off strong, like, bassist vibes. Where it's like, come on, man, shut up.
Zarek's 100% definitely on drums, right? Because of the
100%.
The wands.
That's exactly what I was going to say. He's got one. A wand is just one drumstick.
It's a drumstick, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's magic. As we know, the power rankings go drummer.
Yeah.
Drummer is number one, and then wizard is number two because they have half as many wands.
Yes, smart.
You never see a wizard with two wands. Drummers always have two wands.
And drummers and bassists, they don't get along. So, of course, that's why these two are fighting.
And bassists have no wands. Bassists are the worst.
They should call them Bass Wave. Right?
Well, that's funny.
That would be really cool.
But he should be Bass Wave.
I agree. So Brainwave says that he called Jordan... and goes into the
Michael
wizard's
Jordan?
Michael Jordan, yeah. The Last Dance. Great crossover there. What he's talking about is the character that shows up at the end, of course, this isn't too much of a spoiler, but is Icicle. And the crazy name that he has in the comic books is Jordan Ma Kent. It's spelled M-A-H-K-E-N-T. Wow. And every time I hear that in a comics, I'm like, what? Did somebody read a Superman comic or like passing by the Superman office and somebody was like, Ma Kent? And he's like, yep, that's the last name of our supervillain.
Yeah. And he's married to Patricia Pa Kent.
Yes, of course. So Brainwave is called Jordan, goes into the wizard's head. Wizard does not want that to happen. They also drop a lot of information here, very sketchy information, but we start unraveling the mystery of what's going on. He says that Blue Valley is the perfect test case for Project New America. He also says that Brainwave is going to find and kill Courtney, at which point Zarek's wife comes downstairs, doesn't tell her what's up, and then a cat approaches. And that's, yes, Pete.
That was kind of a weird, like, kind of reveal where he was like, listen, I just wanted to give you the heads up. I'm going to go to this high school and try to kill a high school girl. So just wanted to tell you about that. All right. See you later.
Well, I do love how they make these villains super sinister. Like, really, Brainwave is legit scary. Like, he feels much more threatening than so many villains on superhero shows.
Yeah. And... especially around his own son. That was so fucking creepy, man.
Yeah, we'll get there in a moment. But I do want to ask you, what's your best theory right now? What is Project New America? What are they doing? Because normally you wouldn't... The first thought on the surface, it seems like, oh, they're trying to create an ideal American town. But you wouldn't expect supervillains to do that. So what do you think's really going on?
I mean, by the end of the episode, we see the American Dream is sort of a secret villain headquarters. So I think their plan is to somehow almost be like laundering villainy through the front of a wholesome American town. That to me is what it sort of
amounts to. Yeah, I think it's the same I agree with Justin. It's going to be like New America is going to be kind of built on villains, but it's going to be a Patreon like subscription thing where all the villains can kind of like contribute at whatever level they're at. And then that way they can kind of like support their own cause instead of relying on other people. You know what I mean?
Speaking of which, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Pledge that, and we have different levels where you can fund our New America project. Where I don't want to say what happens next.
Yeah, we have so many crime, different crime levels that we're willing to commit. So please give big, and we will commit large.
So back to our heroes. Pat tells Courtney what happened. He says that he tracked Hourman to Blue Valley, found out that Hourman was tracking the Injustice Society. So that, of course, is why they moved there, other than the new job that Barbara has. Pat and Cork continue to argue. She wants vengeance for her dad. Pat still doesn't believe it's her dad, doesn't want to let her do it. She says, fine, I'll do it myself. And he immediately turns around, and there's a funny little bit where he's like, hey, I don't want to sit on the sidelines. Yeah. Where after all this arguing, he's like, he does want to be left behind.
It's very cute that suddenly this teenage, his teenage stepdaughter is now in the power position. And he's like, come on, I want to play. I also thought it was very funny in this scene. He has the line, well, I don't want you or your mom to be in danger. Pause. Or Mike.
Yeah, that was fun.
He's or like, Mike, oh, yeah, my shithead son.
Mike
yeah.
too.
Sure. Yeah, he's not important yet. He doesn't have any superpowers. Maybe we'll get there later.
It was a little upsetting, this part, because I was like, hey, in my head, I was like, you should be training her up. We should be doing like training montages instead of fighting. It's upsetting that you guys don't want to combine forces, that you're going separate ways.
I don't know if he has the skills that she needs to learn. I think she's learning on her own, and he is major, big sidekick energy.
And, yeah, but I would think he would at least know from working with Starman and seeing the cosmic rod, like, I don't know, ways to communicate it with it or something, but I guess not. I thought
he doesn't know anything about it.
Well, and I think the other thing is he is entirely powered by the fact that he watched who, in his mind, were the greatest superheroes of all time get murdered in front of him by the people that he's tracking down. So he is, even if he wasn't natural sidekick, he'd still be in a position of fear all the time. And so is him saying, I don't want my stepdaughter and stepson and wife to die for this is completely reasonable. 100%. Yeah. She got lucky, survived brainwaves somehow, and he doesn't want her to get hurt the way that he saw everybody else that he cared about get hurt.
Yeah.
I think. Then Pat looks through the files at Brainwave. There's a dog on the stairs. He sees the dog and realizes it is a good time for a training montage, as dogs always indicate. So we get a montage of him trying out the stripe suit. He's trying to shoot his fist properly. It backfires a bunch of times. He can't get it to work. It's very fun.
Very fun. Very
fun. Catches his own butt on fire.
Mm-hmm. Been there. Yeah. All good stuff.
And speaking of the biggest scene in the episode, at this point, it is the next morning. Mikey is starving, but he's playing a Nintendo Switch, which is very hard to get right now. So that was frustrating.
Very cool. Yeah.
Oh, seeing that on TV, that was frustrating.
That feels like a personal trigger for Alex Alvin.
They're sold out everywhere.
You're like,
what am
come
I supposed
on.
To do? Come on, Mikey. Anyway, Court and Pat get approached by Barbara, both separately, or say, oh, I fell down the basement stairs. They give the same line.
That was fun.
Yeah, cute little bit. Barbara's suspicious, but they immediately turn it around by saying, oh, you look very nice, and she forgets what's going on. Also, let's talk about these pancakes. Yes, Pete.
I just want to say, I agree. You know, it was a fun running bit, but she did really look great in that suit.
What is your deal?
Wow, are you hitting on Amy Smart?
No, I'm just saying it was a fun bit, but also, you know, she was killing it.
I like that Luke Wilson falls back on his superpower here of being boring when he describes the stair repair.
Oh, yeah.
And that sort of wipes away, it erases everyone's brain from
thinking
about...
Yeah, it just lulls everybody into a sleep, like, oh, he's actually going to talk about fixing his stare.
That's that big psychic energy.
Yeah.
He also, I wanted to talk about
it's
these pancakes.
It's a Jedi mind trick.
Because he makes both blueberry and chocolate chip pancakes.
That's insane.
That's crazy.
No one would ever do that.
No. How many griddles does he have?
And just how many different bowls he's got, multiple batters he's doing. And I agree with you completely. As a Saturday's pancake day in my household, and we choose a filling, strawberries sometimes, blueberries often, but we don't ever mix don't ever do double.
Right.
Wow. What opulence is this on display here, doing multiple pancake toppings?
Can I just to give it a rundown, the things that track for me in the show, cosmic staff, giant robot suit that the stepdad has, things that don't track, two types of pancakes. Doesn't make any sense.
That's unbelievable. And I hope in the CW version, they repair this breach. That they better edit out the words chocolate pancakes from this.
Right. Just sub it in with him saying, I made blueberry and blueberry pancakes.
Exactly.
No, what I'm saying is they cut that whole pancake scene. It was, you know, it was problematic to begin with.
Wow.
The whole really prison rules eating pancakes. Like, Mike, how do you even know that?
Editor vibes.
I know
Pete
the
here.
Answer to this, but we'll wait and see for our bonus podcast whether you were right, Pete.
Wow, that's a fun teaser right there. Will they or won't they cut the pancake scene? I will say this is a big Mike scene, as we've said. He's got a real attitude. Yeah. He's dropping some golly gee. And let me say, he throws out prison rules unprompted. Has this child served time?
That's what I'm saying.
That is a good question.
How does Mike know? How does he know?
What do you think he got locked up for?
Not to fall back on my interviews for day job stuff, but apparently Luke Wilson and Trey Romano, who plays Mikey, didn't exactly improvise most of their dialogue, but would spend a ton of time on set just riffing back and forth and work with the writers to tweak a lot of the dialogue. So I'm sure some of that was not in the original version of the scripts, and it was just stuff that they were playing with.
That's fun. They have a fun relationship.
It comes off. It's a fun relationship. It comes off that way. I'm glad.
Let me just say a special note to Luke Wilson. Maybe less time riffing with Mike, more time reading a comic book.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's doing a great job. Don't give him notes. He's doing a great job.
Just one note. I'll never give him another note. Just that one.
I don't know, man. You're a classically trained actor. That means more notes. Yeah.
I haven't been getting any notes on set. I better listen to that podcast.
Pardon me, Mr. Director. I'm listening to this podcast for my notes.
Anyway, big event happens immediately after that where Court steals the Starman outfit. We'll come back to that in a moment. In the meantime, Brainwave's kid, Junior, I guess his name is Junior, steals from his wallet, shoes the maid, says he wants some eggs pronto. He's been a real dick to everybody.
Yeah, this guy's this is a bad kid.
Yeah. Bad kid. His dad calls him in, who is Brainwave, asks about what happened at the drive-in, says, was it a girl? Junior says he couldn't tell who it was. He pushes him again, wants to know if it was a girl. He says it was too dark. He's clearly terrified of his father at the same time, no matter how bad he is.
Makes sense. He's a scary dad.
Yeah, it's a creepy-ass scene, man. Like, the tension of this portrayed by both actors is really, really intense. And it does a great job of setting up not only is how dangerous this Brainwave guy is, but then also, like, what this son is capable of if he's such a fucking douche.
Now, let me ask you, it feels like Brainwave is testing his son if he has superpowers.
Yeah.
What did you make of that?
Well, I think, and he looked very disappointed in his son, which was also heartbreaking. But I think that maybe with where this show, this episode ends, maybe like that's going to be the thing that triggers the son's powers. I think maybe his son does have powers, but has never really tried to do it.
It does make me wonder if the American dream thing has anything to do with the second generation, with their kids.
Interesting.
Which would make sense for the overall theme of legacy that plays throughout the show. But yeah, I mean, we'll see more obviously as we go on, but like him pushing his son, clearly he thinks he has the same superpowers that he does. Whether he does or not, we don't know yet.
That's a great call, Alex. That's such a good prediction, especially because we keep seeing this character that is sort of around Courtney, the girl with the dark hair and the white streaks.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be some powers given to her, or we're going to find something out there, I believe.
Ooh. Yeah. And that is a character, without spoiling anything, that is a character from the comics. So we potentially will find out more about her.
And I think that also reinforces the theory we were talking about in the first episode, where perhaps Starman is not Courtney's father, and it's one of the villains. Mm-hmm. And maybe a generational shift between these kids that are being sort of raised by these villains with powers to sort of be part of this American Dream Project, rebelling against their supervillain parents.
So you're saying we might have a reverse situation going on where the good kids become bad and the bad kids become good?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like a Grease situation.
Classic Grease situation. Way to read the listeners' minds. talk about brain. I think we got a brainwave over here.
Do you want me to tell you more? Tell you more?
Oh, my God. Yeah, tell me more about this new America.
Mm. So then we get a nice scene of Courtney, classic superhero scene, making her costume. She is wrecking the heck out of some scissors and some sewing machines. You're pretty upset about this, Pete.
Yeah. You know, this isn't Hero Activity where you fucking sneak into a room, wreck all the equipment, and then run away. Come on. Like, you better go back and fix that. That goes to my list with a gift. Like, if they don't fucking circle back around to that present she's never opened, and as well as fixing those sewing machines, oh boy. Yeah.
We better see that cosmic staff repair that's the different sewing machine and scissors, mm-hmm. which fell apart right in her hands. I mean,
you know, next period there could be a class in there. That their whole day is fucked.
Wow, real big home economics fan over here in Pila Page.
Repping the home ec.
Or consumer science, as it's known now.
So, meanwhile, at the American Dream, the boss over there, who's very, like, I don't know, Colonel Sanders-type dude, I guess.
A bit goofy to be sort of the touch point of the supervillain secret headquarters.
is asking for suggestions from the staff. Barbara immediately chimes in and says, what if they have kind of like a restaurant day on the street? And he immediately shuts her down. She throws out another idea. He shuts that down as well.
And let me just say that second idea was cow pie bingo.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which, let me just say, I'm a huge fan of the sport. They don't really define it much in the episode, but what it is you paint a field, you divide a field up into different squares with spray paint, put a number in each patch on the field, feed a cow a bunch, and then whichever square the cow shits in, that person wins. Whoever had that number wins cow pie bingo.
I did not see that going there. Like, I thought, really? Okay, he's going to, like, you're going to give the cow a little food, whichever one he goes to eat again in. But the shits. Oh,
no, yeah, that cow pie. Cow pie, Pete, is not a delicacy. It is a cow shit. That's what a cow pie is.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
this is a real thing that happens where I'm from in upstate New York. So I love that they brought it into the show.
It was like a moment where you were like, please, Amy Smart, stop raising your hand. This isn't going well for you. I was worried she was going to go hand up again, third time, fourth time.
Let me ask you, Pete, real quick. How often do you call Amy Smart on a weekly, once a week? Or email her? Or
No.
Just no. Not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah,
we're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting up to it.
Great. This is great. This is all
good. I'm going to do a smaller version of cow pie bingo in my backyard with my dog. So I'll keep you guys posted on.
Oh, man. Dude, if you videoed that, I'm sure you get a lot of people interested, man. That would be some
talking about right now? Can we go back to the show? This is so gross.
Yes.
Pat goes to Ripped City, which is the gym where Crusher is there. Crusher. The local gym owner who had approached Pat last episode, he goes there. Pat works out a little bit. They chat a little bit, just sort of a fun scene. I think maybe this is just me being dumb, but it actually took me a minute to understand what was going on here because I feel like it was not totally clearly established.
Wait,
but this
what?
Was like Pat got beaten up a mudge in the robot suit, so he's trying to get stronger and be more the yeah. guy who can yeah. protect his family, right?
Trying yeah, to get yeah. swole.
Okay.
Trying to
yeah,
get ripped.
I mean, that's what he talked about as far as when he walked in eating a sandwich, which is just hysterical. Also, I love that Crusher makes him say ripped, you know, and then he like echoes it. The Crusher douchebag role is really turning into a lot of fun. And then the whole like they start playing the montage music of like, you're the best around. That shit was hysterical. And then, you know, after like the third thing, he's like, how long have we been doing this? Because you think a montage, maybe he's been working out. Like
takes for, a while, montage.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah usually they're very long.
Yeah, so montage like, is just a shortened like day, basically.
Yeah, so he's like 3 minutes, which is the actual like. I thought that was really funny.
I'm Got glad him. You enjoyed that. Back to Courtney. She sits down at lunch. She's not quite sure where to sit. She ends up sitting at the singles table again, where we see Beth, a nerdy girl who goes to the school. She is FaceTiming with her mom and her dad. She made lunch for them. They hate it. They don't
very
wanna...
truly I've never seen parents so embarrassed for their child.
Oh, yeah,
this is scene.
Yeah, that was rough to watch.
I love this bit. Like, I think
great.
This is such a funny, weird bit to throw in the middle. Like, you're focusing on the Crusher thing and the montage, but this worked for me because, like you're saying, Justin, you never see this. I don't think I've ever seen this dynamic on TV before, and it's so funny.
Very funny. Agree. I also like they weave it into the plot where Brainwave Wait. Sort of is seeing this and figures it out. And I love also that they the dad we saw at American Dream, I think, like they're keeping this very small town feel. They could have easily had her parents be other people. And the small town feel is so important to this show, I think. It separates it from so many other superhero shows. Really great.
Now, I want to understand what your point is here, Zelbs. What part was it that you really enjoyed? The fact that the dad hates her daughter? Was that the part that you were like, oh, this
it's
is really fun?
The low-key simmering, wanting to cut the umbilical cord that's clearly coming through from the parents to the daughter. And her being the way that, I don't remember the name of the actress, I think it's Angelica Washington, but I'm not 100% sure, who plays Beth. The way that she just is completely oblivious to everything that they're laying down is, I think it's funny. Like, it's a funny bit.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah. Great.
There you go. But as you mentioned, Brainwave works with the mom. He doesn't quite see Courtney there. There's a fun little, like, just missing seeing her as he's looking for her.
Very close.
And that continues.
We get a little bit of one of the other characters sitting there, Yolanda, who tells Courtney to stop staring at her. She'll potentially become important later on. And then we go to the open house. This is one of our big set pieces.
Yes.
In the episode, the principal of the school is giving a speech about how things are really amazing in Blue Valley right now. Asks people to stand up. People are shouting, having a great time. But the underlying thing the entire time is Brainwave and Courtney are looking for each other. They're trying to find each other and just keep missing each other the entire time.
It's a deadly dance.
And the go dogs moment was fun, too, where she stood up, he turns to look, and then someone jumps up and yells, go dogs, to completely cover her. So it's this kind of fun back and forth that goes on that starts kind of at the lunch table and continues at the rally. And I don't know about you guys, but I was just watching that going, man, I hope we get back to that someday. I would love to be able to be in a crowd again.
Wow. Did not think you were going to land there, yeah, Mr. Boy. LePage.
It's funny you mentioned that because there's something coming up that I feel like was probably the most important part of the episode for you. But as they just keep missing each other, then we get to the social section. Brainwave is going on the hunt for Courtney. He finds another girl with exactly the same curly blonde hair, which is crazy. But then Crusher goes over to Pat. He wants to eat a cookie.
Pat 2.0.
Pat is standing next to the largest pile of chocolate chip cookies I have ever seen in my entire life. Did you notice that, Pete?
Yes, I did. Yeah. It was also like came to a point too, which was really fun. I wouldn't have left that table.
I sort of pictured you as like Garfield with a lasagna, but with those cookies.
Yeah. I would definitely start at the top of that like pyramid and work my way down.
Oh, you wouldn't start at the bottom of the stack of cookies, Pete?
Well, sometimes, but you kind of the top looks more delicious.
Mm. Also easier access the top.
Come down to cookie stacking. We've got easy access at the top.
Little word to the wise, start at the top. Those are the fastest to grab. The bottom cookies are good, but you're going to want to wait to get there after you finish the ones above it. Take it from me, a veteran of the cookie stack eating game.
My only problem with ordering from Cookie Stack is how large their instruction manual is. Yeah. It's just too long. It's too long.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Slow down and start at the top.
In any case, we get another underlying of exactly what's going on with the principal. We get a quick snippet of her conversation. She's talking about legacy, how much the next generation is important. Courtney goes up to Pat, says she's looking for Brainwave. And disappears immediately again, at which point Pat bumps into William's wife, Denise, and he finally gets to eat a cookie, which is very nice. So two nice things happen to him. Makes a friend and he has a cookie.
That was just a weird moment because like Denise seems really into Pat for some reason. And I feel like, okay, this is going to be something that'll pay out later. And I'm wondering if, like, Denise has powers or if Denise is just like, oh, man, this guy doesn't seem like a douche like my husband is. I don't know, but it was, like, a weird moment that I hope they pay off later, not just
something's up there. Yeah, I feel like they will pay it off because they took the time to film it.
Well, but they
and write it and then include it.
They did that, too, with the, you know, Christmas present, but we haven't paid that off yet, so I don't know.
So Courtney does find Brainwave. He starts following her. She's looking for Pat. We get a quick shot of Cindy walking with her mom. She's pissed off. Cindy's the girl with the stripe in her hair. And Brainwave confronts Courtney in the hallway, reads her mind.
Sinister.
Terrifying.
Courtney first walks up to him and is like, Brainwave? Like completely blows the whole thing wide open.
I love that, though. I like that they don't. They're
She's
not.
Being
it's a, it is reckless, but I like that it just. This show's moving quickly through the whole, like, the coin, secret identity stuff. We don't need all that. Let's just do it. Small town, everyone knows everybody. Everyone says hello.
Exactly. So he demands the cosmic staff, or he'll kill her family, which is another interesting detail. From the comics, the cosmic staff is, as we've talked about, like a tool. Here, it has a personality on the show. There's clearly some stuff going on with it that they start to layer in this episode. And it's very interesting to me that Brainwave wants the cosmic staff, which suggests to me that it is something important to their plan in some way.
It feels important. It flies. It's a very cool walking stick.
But it's also weird because they're trying to kind of hurt her to get to the staff. And if they knew anything about the staff, they would need her to activate it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't.
They don't. I think they don't know that. And also, like, we don't know that. We know the staff definitely woke up to her. But the staff may be able to be taken advantage of by someone.
With powers?
Or just, like, someone who understands a little bit more than Pat. Because Pat was just like, every time I touch it, it turns off. But he's a doof.
Speaking of which, let's do another doofy Pat moment. Courtney tells Pat that Brainwave is here. Brainwave is there. They got to get out of there. He immediately goes over to Barbara, says he's not feeling hot because he had some pigs and blankets.
Yes.
Which is like,
very fun.
I don't know. Pigs and blankets are great. They're right, great. Well, I don't buy feeling bad after eating a pig and blanket.
All right. First off, you're right. Yes. You know, pigs and blankets are delicious. That was a... But I like the way...
Hold on a second. Before we move off pigs in a blanket, pigs in a blanket are just nighttime hot dogs. Like, don't be confused by what... It's just a tiny hot dog.
Nighttime hot dogs?
Are you only allowed to have hot dogs during the day? What's going on?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Hot dogs are mostly consumed... In the morning? Never eat a hot dog in the morning.
Oh, you're setting... You've never tailgated in your life?
hot dogs are more of an afternoon food around the grill. No Nighttime, way. That's when the hot dogs get smaller and they get wrapped up in a little blanket. And there you go. That's pigs in a blanket.
Okay. My problem with the scene was
Oh, I really liked the way that it sat in it. Here, Pat had this problem. And sometimes they do something like, oh, whatever. And he, it was just like a, the only thing he could think of, like, oh, how can I get her out of here without telling her exactly or make her scared or whatever. The old, I've got, you know, my tummy hurts. We got to go now. And not only was it realistic and fun, but also the person just comes by with pigs in a blanket at the end. That was a great button to put on that.
It was funny. I will say it was not realistic at all.
He it was like he had a Bylanta commercial or something.
It really was. He looked like he had to go to the bathroom. Yeah. I will say the best joke in that scene, though, was him saying, or she leaves and she's like, Senator, Mr. Mayor, or whatever it was. Like, she was talking to the two most important people in town, and he's like, I have to go puke.
Yeah.
It was gross. It was very gross. I didn't like that at all. I thought it was great. It was paced out in a very funny way, but there was something about the scene where I was like, you're doing too much, Pat.
Oh, no, it was fun.
So, back at the house, Pat and Courtney argue about what to do about confronting Brainwave. Pat is going to go alone. He tells her, if he doesn't come back, leave, run away. You protect your mom, get her out of here, tell her I love her. And what I loved about this scene is not just the way Luke Wilson played it, but the way Breck Bassinger played it, because you can tell that is the moment she realizes how important Pat is to their family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It was really special to kind of have that sit down moment and to like see her kind of get moved like that, because so far she has just been kind of like a tough kid who's reacting to things. And I think that was like a nice kind of layer to who this character is going to kind of be and turn into.
So Pat gets the stripe suit from the auto parts shop. It's got a clicker. You love that one, right, Pete?
Oh, yeah. It was a fun moment.
Okay. Great. I thought maybe you were going to say something more about it. Courtney looks at her dad's pic in her necklace. Barbara comes in, says she's happy that Courtney and Pat are getting along. She gives her a hug. They tell each other they love each other. And that's when Courtney makes a decision, looking out at the stars. She's going to go after him, too. We'll get back to that in a moment. Because first, Brainwave is at the school. Stripe lands and confronts him. He says, who are you? And he doesn't know who he is. And he says, who am I? Someone looking for justice.
That was so good.
I was going to say, I love he pulls like a mic. Like he's a stand-up comedian.
Exactly. Like it was like the thing in a grocery store, like attention customers. That was hysterical. The look on his face, how he delivers that, like that could be like an Arnold Schwarzenegger, like I'm here for justice. And like the fact that he did it like with a, what do I say beforehand? And then kind of rolled this. That was just, it's Luke Wilson getting to have some fun and like letting the actors make some fun choices with the stuff that makes the dialogue come alive. I thought that was great.
It was fun and it's weird, surprising. Again, like that tonal shift they're doing in the show is really fun. I also love that he's a reluctant hero, which is very much in line with the Starman series that we get a reference to later on here and that maybe will feed more into the show.
So we get a big action sequence here. He is throwing cars at Brainwave. Brainwave is just knocking them out of the way with his mind. Finally, he shoots the fist correctly, only for Brainwave to take it, turn it around, throw it right back at him, and he gets knocked down. At which point, we get a quick montage in real time, almost, of Courtney getting dressed. She flies on the staff. We don't get the full reveal yet. But first, Brainwave approaches Pat, and then Courtney knocks him back and comes in and says, I'm Stargirl and that's my sidekick. And that's where we get the big costume reveal, the hero shot, everything.
Yeah, it's a great hero shot.
Yeah.
I like the way that she sort of ETs her way to the fight, flying right into the moon. Yeah. And I really like that they are the gymnastics work that they're giving Stargirl, I think, is really it fits with the character. It makes it something that she was good at before she started being a superhero, so it makes a little bit of sense. And just landing on the idea that they do need to work together, that they fill in the gap for the other one, I think is just really well done in this moment.
Yeah, I mean, when we had the kind of big hero reveal and the costume reveal, I thought it looks great, and it's kind of a fun, kind of especially like first costume for her. I really was disappointed, though, that she's no longer wearing the shell toe Adidas, the clean white with the three red stripes. But she's got kind of like a more costumey kind of thing. So I was sad to see the Adidas go, but I feel like the getup is pretty tight.
Yeah, that was really disappointing to me, too. Sort of on par with not finding out what was in that Christmas present. Close, I feel like those were second. My two big things.
Yeah. You're speaking. Every viewer is thinking the same thing, guys.
One thing that I actually did like a lot about this action sequence, which was very pleasantly Buffy the Vampire Slayer to me, was having the final fight with this first real big superhero fight in the show happen at the school. I just think that's just such a good, strong setting. Having her immediately destroy the school side with her first shot.
She slags it. It was great.
She was like, oh, yeah.
So the whole thing, very good. The fight was very good. She gets separated from the staff. Brainwave says he's going to kill her. Says, imagine my relief when I find out you're just a star girl. At which point, Pat turns his brights on, which shocks Brainwave.
Very dad move to turn the brights on.
Yeah, wait until you're on an empty road to do that, Pat.
100%.
Oh, man, yeah. Nothing worse than someone driving with their brights on. Oh.
But it gives Courtney enough time to grab the staff, stick it in Brainwave's face, at which point he starts glowing. Everything gets wonky. A huge dome of energy grows out around them. Everything
Zero
starts
gravity.
Floating. Yeah, very weird. And we don't find out exactly what's going on with that, but it clearly some sort of mystery that's going to pay off, hopefully, throughout the season. But they beat Brainwave. If he falls back, Pat is fine. He says, what do we do with him? At which point they deliver Brainwave to the hospital. He's in a coma, and Junior, his son, is looking on very mad, but not yet exhibiting any sort of brain powers.
Yeah, but the way they shot it was kind of like, ooh, he's going to kind of like... Mm-hmm. The emotion's going to kind of turn on his powers.
Maybe. I think maybe, like, he doesn't have the brain powers, but he's very good at waving.
Ooh,
maybe that's where the powers really
manifest. Yeah, so now instead of using a wave, you would just wave and it can, like, move people out of the way. Cars go flying when you wave your hand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can see that happening. So we also get what I think is a pretty smart move right here. Rather than having Courtney sit in the aftermath of what she did, Pat very immediately brushes it away, says, that's not your fault. His brain short-circuited. He's okay. And they kind of just move on from there. And normally I'd be like into dealing with the consequences, but I think you're getting to the end of the episode. You have to move on from it. He was a bad guy anyway. Yeah. I like just saying he's bad. We're good. Let's move on.
Yeah, especially because they did a lot of good work to make him, like, really bad. Like, the threats he said, the way he acted, like, that's why I feel like you're sort of with her when she, like, shreds his brain, basically. I love this moment where a man named Ted Knight built the staff. That's a story for another day. I feel like that was maybe going to play into why the sort of that dome of energy came out. I'm assuming cosmic energy, conduit from the stars. The staff is going to have more power than we ever thought. So very excited for that.
And we get some nice stuff from Pat where he says, I never thought there'd be another star man. And she says, star girl.
He also
clearly is turning around to the whole whether she's Sylvester Pemberton's daughter thing. He's wavering a little bit about that now that he's seen her in action. But he says, I can't do this. I can't do this again. She says, no, you got to be my sidekick. The staff chose me, and I chose you.
Yeah, that was great. That was really great.
And then she stuck him in the Pokeball and made him fight in battles.
I also think it was like...
really flustered Pete with that Pokemon rap.
Yeah, I got thrown. I really think it's interesting because they talk like he admits maybe it is your father, which I think was a big point. But when she's looking at the picture, it looks like a picture of Joel McHale. So to me, that kind of confirmed that Starman is her father.
Well, but honestly, can't they just show the mom a picture? Like, why? This mystery feels very solvable.
Yeah, like, yes. Hey, is this the guy?
Because Pat knows all those superhero people, specifically Starman. They could easily be like, "Hey, is this the guy? Is this the guy?" And then that's it.
The excuse I think is that the picture is clearly very faded and hard to see exactly what the face is. Like, it's not a nice, clear picture of Joel McHale, and I think that's on purpose. I would be very surprised if we don't find out that her dad is actually a villain or unimportant or something like that later on, like some sort
maybe
of
icicle. Yeah, maybe it's icicle. Or they should just get a picture from Community and see if that matches with.
Oh yeah, like Donald Glover or Danny Pudi.
Yeah, any cast member of her father could be any cast member from Community.
Maybe they did sort of like a Twins type thing where they're all the dead.
Oh wow!
Oh, nice.
Wow, way to spoil Twins, dude. That's
I'm sorry about that. I promised I would never spoil Twins or Junior on this podcast, and here I go in the second episode.
Yeah, it's fucked up. And thank you for making that promise. That very elaborate.
So then she kind of has this fun moment where she's like, "All right, who's next?"
Well, first she names it Stripe. She comes up with a name rather than Stripesy. And then she says, "What bad guy's next?" At which point the man starts playing. Icicle, Jordan Ma Kent comes to town. Curiously, not with Patricia Pa Kent. She'll probably be coming at some point later. He goes into the American Dream, goes into underground tunnels below American Dream. We see Grundy.
Got the lockdown.
He says, What's up, old friend? Goes in. There's a table, like very classic meeting table. The boss guy is there, Colonel Sanders. They talk about what they're going to do. There's a very nice portrait of the Justice Society. They must have gotten that at a very good caricaturist in Central Park somewhere.
Yeah. And it's that wallpaper, which is actually very hard to hang. Like, they must have really brought in some people to first take the picture.
Think about how big the safe is on the other side of that.
Yes, that's true. And then,
because as we know, all pictures have safes behind them.
Yeah, well, really nice old-timey pictures, too.
Mm-hmm. And the footage, of course, Brainwave found out that Courtney was Stargirl, but he's in a coma now. They don't know that it is Stargirl at all. They think it is a new Starman. They just sort of have a blip of it. And Icicle says, "I killed one Starman. I can kill another." And that's how we end the episode.
Yeah, well, he also freezes the TV, which felt unnecessary.
Yeah. They're going to have to get a new one.
And the "I'm That Man" song or whatever was playing, that was a fun entrance song, like great, like big villain entrance moment. I thought that was another great, like comic book kind of moment playing up the villain entrance as well. I think that was like a really great kind of badass villain thing.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where they go with him. I've been rereading the JSA issues that David Goyer and Jeff Johns wrote, and they do such a great job with Icicle in there, but Icicle is much more like a sarcastic sub-villain than the big boss. Yeah. So there's not necessarily a one-to-one there. Again, like, curious to see what they do with him going forward, because even in the short bit, he is clearly the guy in charge, clearly terrifying. It's going to be fun to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
That all said, who was the star of this episode, guys? Of this episode? Pete, you're probably going to say the shoes or the Christmas present or something like that.
Well, I mean, I was going to say Mike, because, but I'm worried he's going to get cut out, so I don't want to ruin it.
Jeez, really focused on the edit.
Yeah, I'm going to say Luke Wilson. I felt like he really delivered on this episode and really got to kind of flex and show a lot of like what he's going to be like moving forward, especially with the training sandwich montage. That was just glorious.
Justin, what about you?
I got to give it up to Brainwave. I thought setting up a good villain, even though he's defeated pretty soundly here in this episode, like really added sort of a depth to the whole thing and made it made it great for Courtney and Pat to overcome him. So got to give it up to Brainwave.
I would also give it up to Luke Wilson, I think, for the episode, but just to choose somebody else, I'm going to go with Beth Chappell, the kid at the table who's talking to her parents.
Wow.
Just because.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Such a fun bit.
Gotcha.
So weird. Liked it quite a bit. Definitely a small scene that completely stood out to me. All right, folks. As mentioned, we're going to have a bonus podcast that's going to go up Tuesday night after the CW airing. You'll get those 10 minutes that you're missing from the episode back.
It's going to be loose.
Getting loose. Their podcast. Several martinis, several very dirty, disgusting martinis is like
that's
what I like
call
to call
them. Disgusting.
Yeah. That said, if you want to support this podcast, as mentioned earlier, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come on by. Happy to chat about Stargirl with all of you. Socially, StarGuysPod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Check us out there. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show, particularly on iTunes. Leave us a comment. Leave us a rating. Those help us out quite a bit, and we really appreciate it. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. For the Star Guys, this is Alex.
This is Justin.
This is Pete.
Signing off.
We're going to nail that sign off.
Oh, man. One of these days.